Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Lisa Wilson, and I am an alcoholic. And sober by the grace of God. My sobriety date is October the 26th, 1992, and I only got here because of you, because of what you showed me in that book that we refer to, and it's called The Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee for inviting me here. I got to meet some of people from Georgia. Gosh, it's been over a year and a half ago, wasn't it, Edie? Had an awesome time down in Florida and got invited up here. And Jake is from South Carolina. I've known Jake for years, and he said the only reason he's here tonight is because he wanted to see what hair color I now have since I change it so often. So when people go to describe me, you know Lisa, and they can never say, well, what color is her hair this week? You know, hey, that's what it is, what it is. And I told our little recorder here, because my picture's on the screen, my nose comes out crooked to get the right size. So you get the right size there. Does it look good? It looks good. Okay. But thank you truly to Greg and his wife Donna for the communication and for Jody and all the loving notes beforehand. We certainly appreciate it. You know, the truth is I'm here because I'm not all there. And you know, my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got there because someone else had a problem with my drinking, and that was husband number two. And he had a friend who had a friend who had a friend who went to these A&A meetings, and he thought I needed to go with this friend of this friend because I had a drinking problem. And, you know, and my thought is I haven't had enough to drink. So, and I truly, truly thought in my heart of hearts that at these A&A meetings that you taught us how to drink maybe one or two drinks slowly. And so I thought I had to have five drinks before going to the meeting, and was totally shocked to sit down in that room, and there's probably about 30 or 40 people there. It was a stormy, stormy night. And this guy, I don't even remember his name, but he said, it's supposed to be something you call the speaker meeting. I had no idea what a speaker meeting was. And anyway, the speaker didn't show up because of the torrential rain, and they changed it to an open gratitude meeting. And they went around the room one by one, and you all shared about how you were grateful about your DUIs and losing your jobs and losing your families and wrecking your cars. And I'm a little good Catholic, CIA, Catholic Irish alcoholic. We didn't talk about those things. You know, they were swept under the rug, and I'm sitting there thinking, you people are crazy. You people are truly crazy. That's not me. See, I listened to all the differences. That's all I heard was all the differences, not the similarities of what that drink did when it went into me. I left that meeting with 13 ladies' phone numbers. Not one of them did I want, not one of them did I need, and not one of them did I use. And I left with this book that called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know if I stole it or someone gave it to me. But I want you to know I did take it home, and when I would go home from work at lunchtime and drink my 16-ounce vodka with a splash of orange juice, I read out of that book. And you know, it didn't apply to me. It didn't apply to me. And but for the grace of God, on October the 24th, when I had a gun in my hand and it didn't do what it was supposed to do, I made it back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, VIA, the rooms of Discovery, a treatment center. But it took a long time to get back there. You know, I was born actually in Worcester, Massachusetts, so I'm a northern girl. I'm the second oldest of seven children. We lived in up north. You know, nothing really was abnormal about my family growing up. We always had food on the table, roof over the head, decent clothes. My biggest jealousy was the friends that I had that had one or two children in the family. You know, they got spoiled a lot, and they got a lot more than what we got. That was my biggest resentment growing up. And didn't even realize it was a resentment at that time. When I was 10, my family sat us all down, all the kids down at the table, and they said that we are moving to Hollywood. And, you know, right then I knew I was going to become a movie star. So I went back to school that next day, and I told all my friends in class that I was moving to Hollywood, and everyone for the next couple of weeks wrote letters to all their favorite movie stars because I told them I was going to deliver all their letters to all these movie stars. So we get on the airplane, and we're on our jolly way, and we land, and we get off the airplane, and then there's a big sign that says, "Welcome to Hollywood, Florida International Airport." Big disappointment for this one. So, you know, I could not write back to my friends and tell them I gave all the letters to all their movie stars. I just couldn't do that. So, you know, those doors was definitely shut. Talk about disappointment. So, you know, growing up in a home with seven kids, there was always a lot of activity. You know, there was always a lot going on. But my dad drank beer when I got home from work, maybe one or two. I can tell you my mother drank twice in her life, once when the bishop came to dinner. And she had a glass of, God, I can't remember what it is, champagne, and she began to feel it, so she didn't have any more. You know, that I did not get that characteristic from her. And again, my dad, you know, he would drink his beer every now and then. He would get a little tipsy, but nothing out of the ordinary. My dad really wasn't any anything belligerent. He liked things done his way. I mean, if you were going to rake the leaves, they had to be raked in a certain order. If you're going to sweep, you have to be sweep, but nothing out of the ordinary. So I had no real reason as to why I needed to become an alcoholic when I heard all these experiences that you had in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It took me a long time to figure out. I was trying to figure out why did I become an alcoholic, and of course I know why today. It's because I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to put it down. And of course everything else followed in its path then as to why. When I was 16, I fell in lust for the first time. Dan was 6'6", blonde, blue-eyed. And I think we dated for about 4 months, and I had dark long hair. And I was always jealous of women with blonde hair. My sisters all had blonde hair but me. I was the only dark-headed in the family. So, you know, I was a little resentment over the blonde hair there, too. But Dan and I had dated for a while, and then he decided to date someone else. And, of course, you know, I got hurt. That hurt my feelings. I was in full lust. I told you it was love at the time, but full lust. So I had a friend who had a friend. I love those friends of friends. And his name was Barry, and we were going to go out to dinner and go back to the house there and have a few drinks. And anyway, you know, the darndest thing, I had a few drinks, and I don't remember what happened that night, but that next morning I woke up and Barry was laying next to me. Can you believe that? And I'm a little good Catholic girl. We don't do that. My point is, from the very beginning, when I pick up the alcohol, what happens? I end up in places and doing things that I would never have done. My parents raised us very respectfully and got the talk of life, you know, and it just, right, we put the drink in me and it went right out the door. Well, from that little encounter, and I mean, we did date. We continued to date. We continued to have sex. But anyway, it wasn't 2 months. And, you know, I find out I'm pregnant. You know, I'm a little bit over 17 years old and I'm pregnant. And, you know, for a good little Catholic girl, how am I going to go home and tell my parents that I'm pregnant? So this is what I tell my mother. I just love this because I have to think, what did my mother think when I told her that? I thought this sounded better. So I go and we sit down in the bedroom and I tell Mom we got to have a talk here. And she's laying on the bed. She knows what's coming. You know, when your mother's laying like this, they know. And I said, Mom, I'm pregnant. And she asked me, she says, Lisa, who's the father? And I said, well, I don't know if it's Dan or Barry or Bob. I mean, I just named off a whole bunch of guys' names because I thought that sounded better. But I had truly only had relations with one guy. Now, you know, what kind of, is that not alcoholic thinking? My poor mother, I mean, devout Catholic. And the only thing she said to me is, I hope you're going to get married. And that's what we did. We ended up getting married. And then my husband, Barry, thought that a good place to go start a family. Now, mind you, I was born outside of Boston. We moved to South Florida, very cultured, you know, cars, no outhouses. He decides that he wants us to move to West by God, Virginia, a little town called Hinton. Now, I truly did not know people still canned. I did not know people cooked on wood cook stoves. I didn't know people still had outhouses. I mean, talk about culture shock. It was culture shock for 5 years. But looking back, hindsight on it, after we get out of that location, it was the best learning experience I had when having absolutely nothing. Sometimes living on the side of a river, you know. But I also learned to drink some good moonshine up there. I don't know if any of you have ever had moonshine. And the women up in West Virginia like to drink the men under the table. And I've always been one that I wanted to be a part of. So as the new girl on the block, I had to show you that I was a part of and I could drink just as much as you could. Now, mind you, I didn't do it when I was pregnant with my first son. He was born in 1975, Phil. And I didn't drink it in between I did, but not when I had my second one. Isn't that nice, you know, a full-blown alcoholic here. I can tell you that, you know, that my drinking, even in high school, it might have been once every 3 months, 6 months. It wasn't anything. It had to be every weekend or it had to be every day. It was a progression, cunning, baffling, and powerful. The first time I did drink with a bunch of high school friends, it was Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill Wine. Doesn't that just pretty color going down, pretty color coming up? You know, dog, I miss those days. Yeah, right. But you know how alcohol progresses. But anyway, when we lived in West Virginia, they had what they called mountain parties, and usually just the ladies and gentlemen, well, of course, that's where we were, but would leave the kids with somebody they knew, and they would go for the weekend to these mountain parties. And I had we made friends up there and left my youngest son, my only son at the time, you know, with another family to take care of him over the weekend while I went up and went and partied again, drank some moonshine, had some fun, roasted a pig. not even knowing. This is the day before cell phones, and I would have told you I was a good mother. How would they have gotten a hold of me if something happened to him? They had no rights to have him to have treatment, medical treatment if needed, you know? And I didn't realize all these things till I got sober looking hindsight. So then got pregnant with baby number two. We actually had sex again when we were married once, you know? That wasn't a good occurrence because I had a lot of resentments against that man at the time. I truly didn't treat Barry as a husband. Number one, because, you know, look what he did to me. It was all him. It had nothing to do with me. I'm the innocent bystander. Number two, he brings me to a place where, oh my God, we're cooking on another wood cook stove. We're taking baths in number three wash tubs, you know, or in the creek across the street. You know, you're putting tape on the walls to keep the snow from coming in. And that's fortunate if we had a roof overhead. So I had resentments against this man, and I truly did not treat him like a husband should be treated. It was very resentful, if not by words, by actions. You know, you can snub somebody out just by body language. And I had to learn about that body language when I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could cut you down without saying anything. And I had to learn I had to change, you know, 300%. So anyway, after child number two, things were getting really tight up there. Year five, you know, and I did that with Barry, too. He was born in 1978. Would leave the both of them at this grandmother's house to, you know, so she could have them if we went to a party. And, you know, again, maybe once every 3 months, maybe once every 6 months. But I would have told you I was a good mom. You know, those kids always did have food on their back and clues, but, you know, a lot of times I wasn't there. And I can remember, looking back, hindsight, everything's hindsight for this alcoholic. I can remember with Barry, my milk was not good, so the doctor recommended I have a beer every day around 4 o'clock. Now, I didn't realize that I had this, you know, allergy to alcohol yet. But there was a little store, probably about 5 houses up, you know, one of those little country stores. And I would wait every day. I would pace my living room, and it'd be 3:30. And I knew I had to wait till 3:45, because then it took that long to get the kids in the carriage for me to get up to the store to get that beer. And I can remember walking up and getting that beer. And I would only buy one beer, go figure, because that's all he said I could have, one beer. And I would come home, and I'd sit down on the couch, and I'd open that beer, and I'd drink it, and it would just be, and then would start the clock again. I can't wait till tomorrow at 3:30 again when we can do this again. You know, the obsessions kicked in. Well, our marriage wasn't to work out too good in the area at Hinton. It was just a very, very poor city. Not even a city, a little town, had one flashing, blinking light, and if you sneezed, you were through the town. But work wasn't good up there, so my husband suggested that, you know, we move back to South Florida. That's where my parents lived. And that maybe I could go back to Florida first, and then he would bring all of our belongings that fit in 2 suitcases, but I don't know why it took him a month. I was to find out a month later why his girlfriend didn't fit in the suitcases. She had more stuff than I. But remember, I never treated that man as a husband. So anyway, about a month later, he was to come down. I was staying with my parents with the 2 kids. And he gets down, and, you know, Barry was and is a good father. There's a lapse there. When he came down, you know, he couldn't wait to see the kids because he hadn't seen them for a month. So when he got down there, which was, you know, 6 o'clock at night, I'm picking that time out. It wasn't late. He calls my parents' house and he says, you know, I'm just really too tired to see the kids. I'll see him tomorrow or the next day. Now, I'm cunning, baffling, and powerful. That does not sound right to me. So I get in the car and I go down to the little hotel do drop in. I knock on the door that he tells me he's at, and his little girlfriend answers the door. So at that point, we know that, you know, the marriage is over. The marriage is definitely over. And he came out and he says, you know what, I don't want a divorce, but I really don't want anything to do with you, so I'm just going to take off. And that's what he did. He did for the next 16 years. He just disappeared. His parents, his brothers, his sisters, nobody knew where he was. His friends, nobody. He took off. I'm telling you guys, when I can run you off, I can run you off good. So I basically was raising 2 kids on my own. And, you know, I kept in close contact with his parents. I mean, they lived in Missouri, and like every summer we would go up there for a couple of weeks with the kids. They now live in Pensacola, Florida, and I want to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for my family, because it wasn't them, it was all me, and I don't want to forget to tell you this. Our Christmases, our Easters, our any holiday when the family gets together, because we're all in that area, consists of, you ready for this? My first husband and his wife, my second husband and his girlfriend, because I have cured him from ever getting married again, all the grandkids, and all the in-laws. And we get along and we get break bread. And that's not just on the holidays, because we see each other throughout the year. And that's only because of you guys. That's only because of what you taught me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't change, I changed. And my attitude and outlook changed on them. So, you know, that's just a blessing there. But anyway, so Phil was three, Barry was one, and Phil, my oldest son at the time, would always say, "Well, where's Daddy?" And my mother always said, "Don't you say anything bad about that man, it'll come back to bite you." And you want to know, I'm glad she said that to me time and time again. And I used to tell him, "Your daddy's on a slow boat to China, he'll come back when you're 18. Two weeks before his 18th birthday, guess who's coming to dinner? And he showed back up in the lives of his children. He had his own adventures for that 16 years that he was missing. But you know, I'm going to skip around here a lot, because there's some things I do want to, that God's just putting there. When I was 3 months sober, and I have permission when I share about my family, I have permission from them to share this. When I was 3 months sober, I used to give my kids money all the time to get them out of the house so I could drink. And I didn't realize I was giving my oldest son money to go buy drugs. So at 3 months sober, he comes home one night and he was plastered. And I said to him, I said, "Phil," I said, "do you want help?" And he said, "Yeah, Mom, I need help." So Phil got placed into treatment at the time. But when we went to family counseling, the counselor says he's got a lot of issues with his real father and abandonment. So, you know, I got to start to praying. I prayed, and it wasn't that I prayed for his father to show back up. Now, his parents lived in Missouri. My husband's parents lived in Missouri. We're living in Pensacola. So I talked to this God who I got to know in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I couldn't imagine is what his mother had been going through all those years not knowing where her son was. She already lost a son in death. So I started praying, "God, if it be your will, please have Barry have contact his parents." And that's when, 2 weeks before my son's birthday, we get the call in Pensacola, Florida, that he showed up. He showed up in Pensacola, and then he made connections with his parents again. So, you know, all that thing, watch what you pray for. But that was such a healing power in that life. Well, anyway, getting back to, you know, the family's gone, the slow boat to China, comes back when he's 18. We lived with my parents for 2 years. And then we had the opportunity, me and my brother, to move to Pensacola, Florida. I actually had my brother live with me. I've never been without a man. You know, it's parents' house to first husband, back to parents' house, had the brother. Second husband, you know, it's never self-supporting through my own contributions out of pure fear. And now I am, and it's awesome. So anyway, my brother and I moved to Pensacola in 1982, and I started working in a doctor's office with five recently divorced women who like to party 8 days a week. And of course, you know, I like to be a part of. So I've got a built-in babysitter, my brother. You know, he works during the day, and he doesn't mind taking care of the kids. I'm not going to go out till the kids are sleeping, though. You know, I'm going to make sure they're in bed, have fed, and then go out, because remember, I'm a good mother. So we go out and party 9 days a week. They were only going 8 days a week, but I was going 9 days a week. And we know what happens when I pick up and put that drink in me. I end up in places where I don't know who you are. And I loved when I used to go to Century Prison in Pensacola, Florida, and one of the prisoners, because it's an all-male state facility, federal, and they'd go, "I remember you." And I'd go, "Do I owe you amends?" You know? And I can laugh at it today, but it was demoralizing back then, even back then. And how many times did I say to myself I was not going to do that again? So guess what? Hostage number two comes around. Number two, Reese. Sweet guy. Awesome, awesome husband. I could not have asked for a better man to raise two kids that were not his own and treat him just like his own. There was never any question that he loved these kids to the utter core just like his own. But Reese had a problem with his wife, and he's the one that suggested I went to that first AA meeting. So time went to go on. We got married in 1985. And by 1986, and the poor man should have known by when we were dating what my drinking was like, because we dated for over 2 years. And clueless, totally clueless. So about two years into the marriage, he says to me, "Don't you think you're drinking too much?" And you know, my thought is, I haven't had enough. And he thinks I'm drinking too much. What am I going to do? Well, We're cunning, baffling, and powerful. We are going to find a solution. So what do? You get little 7-Up bottles. You get about 10 of them, and you pour your vodka in those little 7-Up bottles, and you place them all over the house. That way he can't find your bottle, and that's what I did for the next couple of years. And during the next couple of years also, what my occurrence would be, I would get so sick, so dehydrated, that I would end up in one of the little emergency centers. Started off at the emergency room first, but you don't go back to the same place because they let you know that your blood work last time wasn't too good and you never came back again. I can tell you there's a total of like 32 or 33 in the Pensacola, Fort Walton, Destin area that you can go to, because I always made it a point to go to a different one every time. And what they do is they give you your IV for your fluids because you're so dehydrated. They take your blood work. They call you a couple days later, tell you your blood work shot, there's something wrong with you. And, you know, after several years, 1990 is really when it really started to crash down bad. And it crashed down bad long before that. But that's when I got to the point of no return. I became physically addicted. I could stop for 3 months drinking or 6 months not drinking. And the minute I picked back up, guess what? It was right back to that half gallon of vodka within 2 or 3 days again. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I kept on saying to myself, you know, if the husband would get off my back, if work would get off my back, if this would get off my back, everything would be okay. I still couldn't connect the dots all the way to the alcohol, although I knew it was causing some problems. Still wasn't all the problems. Well, in 1990, 91, things got so bad that I actually couldn't even hold any food down. Got brought to the hospital by my friend next door. They did the blood work, and then they call a couple days later. You know, I usually always get the phone call because husband works late at night. But he got the phone call this time, and it was the nurse telling him that, you know, Lisa needs to come have a liver biopsy. Her liver's enzymes are out of whack. Now, mind you, I'm hiding alcohol all over the house by now. No one has seen me with a drink in my hand in months and months and months. He thinks I'm not drinking, but he still can't figure out why I'm falling out of the bathtub, tripping on the rug, you know, falling out of the chair, why I'm sitting there. And I tell him, you know, I got sinus problems. Oh, it's the mouthwash you're smelling. I mean, this poor man was in such denial. So he gets off the phone and he turns around and he looks at me. He says, "Have you been drinking?" I said, "No." So anyway, he schedules a liver biopsy and we go to get the liver biopsy. And the liver tech, I'll never forget the liver tech. They make you feel so good when they think you're an alcoholic. Well, maybe because you smell a little bit of alcohol when you go in there. But he draws this outline around your stomach for your liver, and he's going all the way around. And I said, "Oh, I didn't realize your liver was that big." And he just said real snotty, "It's not, you know." So anyway, they do the liver biopsy, and it didn't come out good. You know, it didn't come out good. The phone call that I recall, I love my perception. Don't you like your perception of what you hear and what someone else hears? This is what I heard. I heard when they called what the result is, it's not good, and you have a year to live, and you need to stop drinking. Come back and see us in a year. Click. That's what I heard. Now, what was actually said, I really don't know, but I know they didn't mention anything about any kind of recovery program. Alcoholics Anonymous are going to a treatment center. And you know what? Even at that point, if they had mentioned it, I don't even think I was ready. You know, I really don't think I was ready, but I'll tell you what it did. It scared the heck out of me. It scared the heck out of me for three whole months. And then, you know, that's my oldest son got in trouble with the law, him and his some friends. And again, remember, I have permission to share this. He laughs at it today. We all do. Stupidity. Him and 5 straight-A students go to Gulf Breeze Beach, and they put it this way. We get a call from the Gulf Breeze Police Department, and our sons have been arrested. We need to come to the jail to pick them up and make arrangements, yada, yada, yada. So we get there, and they were arrested for breaking and entering into cars and taking stuff. Well, here we're sitting in front of all these couple police officers, and here's their mentality. "But, Mom, we weren't breaking and entering because they were unlocked." Now, I can understand that, you know, but anyway. And that, because we had to go before a judge, like, you know what, 2-3 weeks later, I needed something to get that edge off. Because at that point, I was at the boiling point. I hadn't had a drink for 3 months. All this pressure, and I have no solution. I have absolutely no solution but just to put the drink down, and that doesn't work. You know, I've tried that I don't know how many times. I'm going ballistic. So I go around the corner to the little Dew drop-in bar that's open at 7 o'clock in the morning, the drive-thru. My dad wants another bottle, just a little pony, you know, start with a little pony. And then you make it around the corner, and then you got to go back, and you got to get a fifth. because that didn't work. So I made it through the fifth for that day, and that's all I can truly remember for the next couple of weeks. I don't really remember what happened for that next couple of weeks, but I know in my house at that time there was 2 half-gallons of vodka. So cunning, baffling, and powerful one more time. So here we go, and that's what happened. You know, that one day when I looked, my eyes finally got contact with that mirror. I hadn't looked at myself, you know, to get dressed, but eye-to-eye contact, I hadn't done that in years. And eye-to-eye contact was made, and I thought, night of the living dead. Night of the living dead. That's when alcohol stopped working. It didn't get me drunk, and it didn't get me sober. My arms were numb. My legs were numb. It was just a walking zombie. So I picked up the gun, and again, the gun didn't do what it was supposed to do. I ended up in the Baptist Hospital emergency room, and it seemed like I was there for hours and hours and hours, and this doctor comes in. Now, mind you, I've also had big blisters, those bubble blisters on the back of my tongue from drinking so much straight vodka. And this doctor comes in, and I'll never forget his words, and he looked at me and says, "Do you know why you're here?" And I blurted out the word alcohol, and my husband says, "She doesn't drink." Oh, that poor man. Do you see what I can do with you guys? Oh, that poor man. And so anyway, what the doctor said was I know, was an angel at the time, because he just said, "Do you want help?" And oh my goodness, it was like a million-pound boulder had been taken off of my chest. And I just said yes. And from the hospital, I went to the Rooms of Discovery, a treatment center. In the Rooms of Discovery, you had a meeting every day of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of you each day, somebody different each day, twice a day actually, would come in and bring a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was clueless. The very first meeting I went to, when I got over across the street, and it was a first step program. Jake, I don't know if you remember that one. And a doctor in recovery was in head of it, and all the nurses there were recovering alcoholics. And they bring you downstairs for the meeting. So the first day we go down to the meeting, and they said, "Who's a beginner, Chip?" And I didn't know what a beginner was. So the girl next to me nudges me, and she says, "Go get one, go get one." So I can remember walking up there and getting that chip, and I remember them putting it in my hand, and then I remember sitting back down on that chair, and I remember reading what it said, "To thine own self be true." And I had no clue what that meant. And then the guy next to me asked me if I give massages, and I knew I was not in the right place. And if I knew at the time, I would probably say, "Do I owe you amends too?" But truly, what that coin had said at that moment to my head, to my heart, I didn't know. And I didn't think anything was going to work for me at that point either. So, you know, they say it's a 30-day program, and they say your head gets a little bit clearer. At that point, I couldn't figure out. I could tell you that with a brush in my hand that you could brush your hair, but my hand wouldn't get to my head to brush it. I could tell you how to get dressed, but I couldn't actually physically get dressed on my own. I needed help. It was like kind of like a wet brain that I described. And they said, you know, 3 days, 7 days, things are going to get better. We're going to give you some medicine to make sure you don't have any seizures, yada, 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 yada. Third day, nothing's happening. Seventh day, nothing's happening. I'm sitting in meetings, and I'm sitting in their meetings and the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and nothing's registering. So, you know, day 8, they say, well, it's going to get better. Well, by day 10 or 11, they say, things aren't getting too much better. Maybe you'll, a little bit of time in Chattahoochee will do you a little bit better. Now, I don't know if you know what Chattahoochee is. I didn't know what Chattahoochee was, but I found out what Chattahoochee was, and I didn't want to go to Chattahoochee. But I wanted to kill myself. So, and you know, it's funny that people in treatment are very, very open on how to kill yourself in treatment. You know, they share about how other people kill themselves in treatment. So that was going to be my next plan, because I was not going to this place called Chattahoochee. So I asked the doctor to please call in the priest, because I wanted my last rites, because I was going to try to kill myself that night in treatment. At that time, you could still smoke. Yes, I am one of those. I am sorry. My sponsor said not to do anything for the first year about my smoking. So you could still smoke, and we used to walk down, and I'd be pulling. It was crazy anyway. So I walked down to the smoke room, and I went and got a cigarette first, and I couldn't read. Oh, you don't have the steps and traditions up there. That's okay. You've got the convention sign. But I used to. That's important too. When we would sit in meetings, I would look at the step. We admitted we were, and I couldn't, it wouldn't register. I didn't get the we, and I didn't get everything else. It just would not register. Nothing registered. So on this day that I called for my last rites, I remember going back to my room. I remember getting on my knees or standing up or, you know, vomiting over the commode as I did so many mornings. I don't know what I did, but I know I asked this God that I didn't understand to help me. And I believe I did it to my innermost soul for this God to help me. And I got my cigarette and I started to walk down to the back room there, and I walked by the meeting room and I looked at the steps and traditions hanging on the wall, and I stopped dead in my tracks because then I got started reading them and I knew what they meant. I didn't know how to apply them, but I could read the words and I knew what they meant. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and then our lives had become unmanageable, and I just kept on yelling them out. And anyway, I started yelling them out and ran down to the nurse's station, and I was brushing my hair and pulling my clothes off and putting them back on to show them I could finally dress myself, and they gave me a muscle relaxer or something to shut me up. What I did not realize then, until I got a year sober, that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Because at that point, it was that meeting, that day, that Clay brought in a grapevine. Our mini meeting in print, and on the back of that grapevine, she wrote her name and she wrote her phone number, and she said, before you leave here, or the minute you get home, you give me a call and I'll come pick you up for a meeting. And they used to take us to outside meetings. And that's what I did. I gave Clay a call when I got home, and she said, I'll come pick you up, and you know, I'm a good alcoholic, I want to out just in case. So I said, no, I'll drive, I know where I'm going. So Clay met me downstairs, and my home group at the time was the New Warrington Group in Pensacola, Florida. My current home group is Seeds of Sobriety in Pensacola, Florida. We meet on Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. Please come and see us. But it was New Warrington, and that's where I was to get my grounding. And we walked up those 13 steps, and we sat in that room in the back. You know, I always sit in the back, and I'd be a shaking and a bacon boy. You ever see anybody sitting in a meeting shaking? And good old Jerry would always sit next to me. Oh, Jerry, God bless her. And she'd put her hand on my leg to make me stop shaking, and she'd say, honey, it's going to be okay. And here I'm sitting thinking it's not going to be okay. You know, it's, you don't understand. You don't understand me. How many do you say that? Any of you say that? You don't understand me. You don't understand me. And I'd stop shaking, and she would take her hand off, and then all of a sudden, and it wasn't until the whole back row got shaken again that you... Anyway, and then it was Jerry and Margaret and Jeannie and all those ladies. And thank God for the ladies in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you men too, but mostly the ladies. They're the ones that saved my butt, and they're the ones that I hated the most when I got into the rooms. I had to learn how to like those ladies in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my sponsor was Margaret, and Margaret told me, you know, you need to get busy. You need to get busy in here. I want you here 45 minutes before the meeting tomorrow, right when you get off work. You come straight here, and we're going to get busy. So you know what? They gave me coffee duty that night. I made coffee, I want you to know, for all of you. It was one of those big urns. I was not used to drinking coffee. I did not know you did not put a 5-pound can of coffee in that urn. And when you ladies after the meeting were complaining about growing hair chest, I got bathroom duty. Jake used to be our coffee maker at Area Assembly. They didn't like me making coffee anymore. But we got little packets about 5 years ago, so I can make coffee now again. I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous and around Alcoholics Anonymous. I occupied a chair not knowing how to apply these steps. You know, Margaret used to have meetings of the ladies out at the house every Friday night. Went to a meeting just about every day. My home life was not a good life. Again, I have permission to share this for a reason, because this is what God did for me. My husband couldn't understand how you all could help me not to drink. My kids couldn't stand me because how many times did I say I wasn't going to drink? I'm sorry, I'm never going to do that again. And I did. Again and again and again. And I would go to these meetings, usually the 5:30 meeting every day, and then come home and get the same thing every night. You're going to be nothing but drunk. The kids, when they'd walk by me, they'd be get the out of my way. You know, they weren't polite. Why should they be? And, of course, I would get on the phone with my sponsor and, oh, poor me, you know. And she'd say, honey, how long did you drink for? How long did you tell them you were sorry for? Things aren't going to change overnight. This is what you need to do. And then she'd refer to me to some place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or I'd say, and what page is that on? And she'd say, the first 164. I used to go home and write. I would write little notes on my hand with a pen during a meeting, because I didn't want you to think I was stupid. I was not going to ask any questions. I'd write all these little notes down, and I'd go home and write them in the words. Good Lord, the dictionary became my next best friend. I didn't realize insanity was doing the same thing, expecting different results over and over again. Insanity was my uncle who was doing the Thorazine shuffle because they got shot in the head during the war. That's what I pictured as insane. I couldn't get that I was insane for doing the same thing again and again and again. But I got busy. From the coffee, you know, we got bathroom duty. You know, every week, at least once a week or every 2 weeks, there'd be carloads of us, four, five, six carloads, and we'd drive for an hour meeting to go listen to a workshop. Why do I need to know about Alcoholics Anonymous? I just don't want to drink. You know, when you would get home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after stopping at Shoney's or Denny's, you know, after everyone chit-chatting, all these knowledgeable people about Alcoholics Anonymous, and then there's me. And I felt so, oof. So then I knew I wanted to learn more. I did want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got into the cervix structure, thank God, to my sponsor. And we went to these workshops, and we went to these even regular meetings, 8 o'clock speaker meetings, and we went here, we went there, we went to Area Assembly. I was never going back to Area Assembly after my first Area Assembly. Oh my God, 300, 400 happy people that want to hug you. You know, that was not my life. Women, especially. Now, the men I didn't mind. I'm not the men I didn't mind, not the women. And that's not even true. You know, I hated myself to the end, of course, so much that for my first 6 months in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was known as Martha. I did not tell you what my real name was. And you know, it's really funny. And, you know, Pensacola is a military town, so we get a lot of military that come and go. And every now and then you'll get a military person that moves back to Pensacola or comes back for some training. And they'll go, Martha! So isn't it funny? And it was my 6 months sober. I remember in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was a ladies' meeting, and I put my hand up, and I've learned about honesty. And I said, I want you to all know my name is Lisa, and I am an alcoholic. You know, we started off with archives in our home group. We did other things. We did PI, CPC, but I got to be secretary. And a secretary for the group, and it was a large group. There's over 100 people there, meet 3 times a day. And for secretary for the group, how our group celebrated birthdays is there was a speaker. If you were celebrating, there were so many. Speaker 3 nights a week, and they were usually birthday celebrations, sobriety celebrations. So it was, I picked up the cakes, you know, made arrangements. Well, the night before, you know, hurricane, I can't remember if it was Opal or Aaron, or even if it was before that. But anyway, her hurricane was going to hit within the next couple of days. So I called the guy up before the next night to see if he's still going to celebrate his birthday, because, you know, we do have to prepare when it's hurricane stuff. And he says, yeah, I'm still going to celebrate, so I got to go to Albertson's to pick up the birthday cake. So you know how stores get, I'm sure, here too, when there's a storm, it's crowded. And I can't get anywhere near the bakery. I'm over here by the deli. Well, Barbara from the deli yells to the bakery lady, the lady from Alcoholics Anonymous is here to pick up her cake. I had a clear shot to the bakery, They did not want what I had. But you know, what I learned out of that is when I walked out of that store, that is the first time I didn't hang my head down in shame. It really went from here to here. And thank God I stayed busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous doing, not only in my home group, but in district. That workshop's at 5. Got busy in district, helping out, carrying the message behind the walls. You know, anyone anywhere reaches out, there is something for all of us to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter if it's setting up the chairs. It doesn't matter if it's making coffee. It doesn't matter if it's carrying a message behind the walls. Give back to Alcoholics Anonymous is what my sponsor told me. If I'm going to be grateful, then show it. And no one else has to know it. So we got busy at district, and then we got busy at area. I want to tell you, I was never GSR or DCM, but I got the opportunity in 2009 and 2010 to serve Area 1, Alabama, Northwest Florida as their Panel 59 delegate, a drunk like me. A drunk like me. Because I did. I made commitments. Can you believe alcoholics make commitments and we keep them? Where did I learn that? From you all, from this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know we're getting close to the workshop, and I think that workshop's important about the traditions, because that's why we're here, and I want to share with you, if you don't mind, about my youngest son, Barry, because Barry had the biggest time with his mama being a drunk. You know, we all have our own adventures coming in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, our experience, strength, and hope, and I have a million more. But this one is when I knew about this God. I had no doubts about God working in my life since this had happened. Barry was a resentful little twit. Can you take that off the recorder, please? But Barry knows it at the time. I want to tell you what just happened to Barry. Phil, my oldest son, before I tell you, the one that went into treatment, Phil just retired from the Army, serving 20 years in the Army. He's going into the Air Force now as a boat captain. So, you know, Phil didn't carry on like his mom did, thank God. Barry, when he was young, he was 16, 17, he hated me to the utter core. He moved with me. Me and my husband divorced when I was 3 years sober, but he hated his mother to the utter core. Let me describe Barry. Dreadlocks down to here. Barry's room was black rug, black curtain. Huck Me, Suck Me, Duck Me music was usually playing on the radio. And I put a sign over his door that said, Ann Landers said, don't go there. It was awful. Uh-oh. I am trying to get spiritual. Oh, thank God for those ladies. I had to call at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to kill them. I'm going to kill them. Anyway, God bless them. Barry hated his mom to the other core. And I'm talking, he would pass by me and literally push me and say the same things. You're not going to be anything but I'm drunk. And my prayer, because you taught me what it should be, Lisa, just pray to God that God touches his heart like he touched your heart that one night in the emergency room. And that was my prayer. If it is your will, God, please touch his heart. 5 years sober, so a little, almost 2.5 years we've been living by ourselves. Every night I would stop at my door at home and I would say the serenity prayer and then ask God to touch his heart because I knew what I was going to get from him behind the door. You told me not to say anything with my mouth because I couldn't take it back. And so every time he came out with his vulgarity, he was a miserable, miserable, miserable teenager to the core. And if you saw him on the street, you'd know it too. 5 years sober, I wake up one Saturday morning and there's a note on my kitchen table and it says, Mom, I just want you to know I love you and I knew he committed suicide. That's how miserable he was. So I walk back to his bedroom, shaking like a leaf. You can imagine any parent, any of you. And I open the door and I can't see anything because everything's black, black curtains, black rug, black comforter. And I pull the comforter off of his face and his little eyes pop open. I wanted to kill him, but I didn't. Parents know that too. And he says to me, Mom, did you get my note? And I says, yeah, Barry, what's that all about? And he says, Mom, we need to talk. I said, okay, Barry. So I went back into my room and I got what comforts me, what is comfort me, and that's my rosary beads just for me. And that didn't take me a minute to get back into his room. And he's standing up on his bed and he's pulling down those vulgar posters. He's got a garbage bag and he's filling up all his dirty cassettes into the garbage bag. And then he plops down on his bed. Now, Barry weighed 240 pounds and I was a little bit thinner. I want to give you a visual. He plops down and I plopped up. We weren't laughing at the time. But he sits there and he says, you know, Mom, he says, you know, all these years you've said God touched your life and I hope he touches yours in an instant. I went to a revival last night, Mom, and God touched my life. Barry graduated high school about a year later. 3 years later, he graduated ministry school. But for the grace of God. And not that God was going to always answer all of my prayers, but God saw fit that Barry needed to share how it was for him to grow up with a drunk mom to the youth in the state of Florida. Barry does that, but now Barry's also a registered nurse at Baptist Hospital in Pensacola, Florida. Barry believes that God is going to give him as many children as he'll have. Right now he has 5, and I need another credit card, please. My oldest son, Phil, again, he just retired from the Army. 20 years, he's got 2 daughters, Elise. Elise was born October the 24th, 1999. October the 24th, 1992, I had the gun in my hand and it didn't do what it was supposed to do. Isn't God awesome? We are all filled with the sunlight of the Spirit. May it continue to shine through us into the lives of others. Thank you for letting me share.